You're listening to the only show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with your host, Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.
Welcome to today's episode of The Coaching Perspective. I'm your host, Doug Gefeller, and we have two great guests for you today. Rita Conley, who's going to give us her review of the February ICF Orange County Speaker Ted McGrath, and Michael Stratford, MCC, who's going to talk to us about teen coaching. Hey, this is a first for us here on the show in that both of today's guests have been with us before. Well, if you're listening to the show live, then you're on octalkradio.net, Orange County's premier talk radio station. Thanks for tuning in. If you're listening to our podcast, then hey, thanks for visiting either our website, thecoachingperspective.com, or iTunes, or our Podbeam site. But hey, if you're listening to the podcast, wherever you are, check out our archives for some other great shows, interesting guests, and fascinating topics. Well, today's program, we're going to start off with Rita. Rita, are you with us today?
I am with us.
Hey, great to have you here.
Thank you, Doug.
Well, look, this is what we call Rita's Review, Rita's Corner. I don't know what we're going to call it, but Rita Conley of HR Alternatives appears on the Coaching Perspective radio show every month to bring you a summary of the latest ICF Orange County meeting. So today she's given us a review of the February 13th, sort of pre-Valentine's Day meeting. With the featured guest at that meeting was Ted McGrath. So Rita, what'd you think?
All right. So here is the skinny on the presentation that Ted McGrath provided. It was all about sharing your personal story and making sure that that story is a compelling personal story, because that story is going to create your brand. So again, very critical, the story. He recommended the book To Sell as Human by Daniel Pink. And so what makes a good story? Well, first of all, it has to be authentic and real, and I'm sure that many of us can think of people that are really good storytellers. And what happens is you begin to tell your story, and people start to tune in, and they start to want to learn more about your story. So the story can't be rushed. You've got to take your time. You've got to create that environment for the listener to be intrigued by your story. You incorporate your life lessons. People want to know that you screwed up. People want to know you did really well. People want to know about the bumps in the road, because that makes it real and that makes them connect to the storyteller. You also have a wider reach when you have that personal message. The more the message is personal, the more there's a value to the message. And people, they connect with that story, right? Sometimes people can say, yeah, I went through that struggle, but maybe their outcome wasn't positive. So if you have a story that talks about that struggle, but you have a positive outcome, now you have a listener that is intrigued because you changed something, and people want to buy that. They want to listen to what you did so that they don't go through that problem again. The framework of the story is so similar to sort of a hero's journey, where that you're called forth with that situation, you enter the pit, which is really fun. That's where the dragon is slain, right? That's the big problem. That's the thing you don't want to face. But once you get into that pit and you slay that dragon, that's when you grow. That's when you shift. And that's when the breakthrough occurs. That's when you get to celebrate. So clearly that journey is a little painful, but once you slay that dragon, whatever that is, you get enlightened and you get to celebrate. Ted also presented the passion factor within the story. What's the thing you do better than anyone else? And only the person knows that. And the funny thing about that is everybody does something, and a lot of us take for granted that little something. And you kind of say, well, that's nothing. But in the big scheme, that one little thing that isn't nothing is ginormous to someone else. And people will pay you for that. So find that one thing that you do better than anyone else. And that thing can end up creating so much value to the world. It can serve a higher purpose. Again, find out what is that one special thing you have that other people want. They don't have it, so they will pay you for that. And what's the one word that describes your passion, your talent, your value, whatever that is? Maybe you're, you know, have a high sense of discipline. Maybe you're a fascinating individual. Maybe you're, you know, have a strong sense of focus. Whatever. That's your word. Use it. In creating your passion statement, that is basically your elevator speech. So what you would say is, I help people to do this so that they can have that. So I help people to stay accountable so that they can then reach their goals. So you have to then identify, what is your this and that? So what is it that people will pay you for because they need to change in their life, and only you have the value that they would pay for? So that was pretty good stuff. Ted also described this sort of 12-step passion to profits formula, and I'm just going to go over three very quickly. In order to identify your passion, you go to a peaceful place. You breathe. You basically center yourself, and you can do this exercise every morning. You get to that special place where you're calm. And then you invite your best self to join you. And the best self is when you are on top of the world. So while you're breathing, you visualize your greatest self. So that person is now with you. And there's no mind chatter, so you're clear. And then you ask yourself key questions. Who am I? What do I want to do with my life? And that's how you begin your day. And then through the process, you will find the answers to your problems. Things will just show up because you've already set yourself up for success by taking that time every morning to practice or to create this habit and getting centered and inviting your best self and then asking the question, and then you begin your day. So it's kind of cool how things sort of show up. It's like the law of attraction, if you will. And he also talked about the problem keeping a coach from pursuing their passion. Now, this was, in my interpretation, this is probably one of the strongest parts. What keeps people from becoming their ultimate best? Well, you have to surface the fear or the concern. So what is stopping me from being unbelievable or amazing or outstanding? What is it? Once you bring that up, then you can start working. So you have to identify, what is that secret fear or concern? What is below that surface that's holding me back? And that creates that sense of awareness, right? You figure out what it is, then, of course, you got to deal with it. You got to slay that dragon, and then you begin your road to success. And, of course, with the problem, there's always an opportunity. So you kind of have to imagine, once you slay that dragon, whatever it is, fear of public speaking, fear of rejection, whatever it is, get rid of that dragon, then you can imagine the possibilities of what your life is going to look like. And so this is, again, incredible journey, and this becomes your story. So once you go through this whole process, then you start to create your story, which is your story. And it is real. It is authentic. And, again, people will want to purchase that which you can solve, that value that means a lot, and that can create a wonderful experience. So it's all sort of that process of getting to be who you are and then sharing with others what makes you so darn special and intriguing them enough to say, okay, let me write the check out. I really need your help. That was it, Doug. That was the exciting experience. Just, again, everyone's got the potential to be something unbelievable. You just have to realize what it is that makes you so special, then create the story to compel people to listen to you and to want to buy that experience, that value that you can provide to them that they themselves don't hold. And anything goes. And again, creating this habit, right? Every morning you wake up and you take a deep breath and you get centered and clear and invite your best self in, and then ask yourself important questions that you want answers to, that you have the answers, right? We all have the answers to the questions. We just have to center ourselves and take a deep breath and let it all go, and then kind of watch it all flow and create the magic that's for everybody to enjoy.
Rita, great job recapping, you know, an hour and a half presentation. Obviously, we can't begin to do it justice here in this recap, but I think Rita's really given you a flavor of what the talk was about, and hopefully maybe enticed some of you listening out there to attend more of the second Thursday of the month meetings that the ICF Orange County chapter has. Rita, great job. Great job.
Thank you, Doug.
So let me ask you, as long as I got you on the line here, anything exciting in your week that you want to share with our audience?
Well, I can say that I got a new client today.
Hey, that's exciting for all of us. That's exciting for all of us. Do you have a secret there on how you got a new client that you want to share?
You know what? I actually, it's not a secret, but the client asked me, well, you know, what can you do for me? And I said, you know what? I can give you peace of mind. I can take away the pain. I can keep you from worrying. And that did it.
Great job. Rita, hey, we're going to look forward to having you back next month. And thank you very much for being with us again.
All right. Thank you so much, Doug.
All right. Great having you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, we were just listening to Rita Conley of HR Alternatives, a great firm, and a great coach, Rita, there, an HR expert. Hey, you know, something interesting that I picked up today, where does the word coach come from? Well, I read that the word coach comes from the British use of the word bus, meaning a coach literally helps you get where you want to go. There's a some theories that say that the word coach comes from the Hungarian town where they made coaches that were drawn by horses to travel in, and that the best coach maker was a person who I don't know how to say it right in that language, but it was a derivative of the word coach. And so, actually, that was a spinoff, whether we're talking athletic or we're talking life or business coaches, was a coach being someone that helps you get where you want to go. That very often, you as the traveler, you do not know precisely your destination, much less how you're going to get there. So it's the role of the coach to know and deal with that, that the coach knows maybe various possible routes, helps you identify the destination, maybe can identify some deviations that you do or don't want to take, identify some places that might be dangerous, you know, warning, curve ahead, keep you calm, and get you right to your destination. That's what a coach is all about. So, hey, I just thought that was kind of interesting. My word for the day. All right, we're going to get our second guest on the line in just a moment here. While we're getting them, let me just mention that, you know, here at the Coaching Perspective, that we have been coaching executives and business owners for 18 years, all under the banner of the Coaching Perspective. Helping to create more effective teams is our primary focus. We work with both existing and new management teams and project teams. And in all cases, our goal is to increase the productivity of the team and the individual member. We also offer individual coaching from the top executive to the newest entry-level position, coaching for people who want to sharpen their business skills, communication workshops. We are licensed with Target Training International to provide the DISC assessment, and most of our clients make great use of that tool, one of my favorite assessments there. Well, look, we're going to be getting to Michael Stratford in just a second when he gets on the line here. And we're going to be talking about coaching teens with Michael. You know, this is kind of an interesting story in that I've known Michael for a number of years. We've been on some panels together. Michael's been on the radio show before. And this last week, I had someone reach out to me and want me to give him a recommendation for a coach for a teen. And I really didn't know of a coach that specialized in teens. So I reached out to some of my coaching network, and guess what? I found out that Michael coaches teens. It kind of made me stop and think that, you know, how many people are we dealing with that don't really understand the full scope of what we do or what we can do for them and what we have to offer? And so, you know, Michael was kind of got back to me and said, hey, Doug, you know, I coach teens. And I said, you know, gee whiz, I didn't know that. Maybe we should get together and explore again what we don't know about each other that we think we know. And he said, hey, let's get together next week for lunch and do that. And I said, I got a better idea. Why don't you come on the show and let's talk about your teen coaching? So here he is. Michael, you with us?
I'm with you.
Hey, great. It's great to have you here. Let me just for a second, Michael, mention that you are a speaker, an author, a master certified coach. You like to be known as the provocateur of transformation, and you can explain that. Someone once said that Michael's a blend of Robin Williams and the Dalai Lama. I love that one.
I think they were being gracious.
Besides all of that, Michael's got a lot of business savvy, a lot of experience. He's had 56 different jobs. He's got a unique perspective on the employment engagement. He is a presenter. He speaks from experience. He's got the mastery born of two decades of coaching clients from rock bands to Fortune 500 company executives, has trained over 6,000 coaches, authored 4 books, and kept a secret from me that he teaches coaches teens. So, Michael, welcome.
Well, thanks, Doug. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you back here. Okay, I'm going to just throw it out. We'll pick up the conversation. But, you know, coaching teens, I've never done it. It sounds scary to me. When people ask, I go, I don't do that. What made you get into that?
Well, I don't know that it was actually a direct line. It kind of found me out of conversations I had with other people and, with parents and people like that. And when I was coaching them, and then all of a sudden people would start referring, well, can you talk to my kid? And I think coaches are in a unique position that one might say is similar to a grandparent, in that they no longer have the place of having to discipline the child and make sure that they grow up right, so to speak. So the teen is more open to different kinds of conversation than they would be with a parent.
Okay, I can understand that. I mean, we've all been in that position. If it comes from our parent, we can't really listen to it with an open mind.
Yes, exactly. And the other part of it is that the essential process of coaching, which is about honoring the uniqueness of the individual and their methodology, really does support someone who is going through a period of their life where they're wondering who the heck they are, where are they going, and what are they about, and the only way I know how to define myself is by pushing against my parents.
Isn't that true?
So we get the privilege of being able to engage in a different kind of conversation because we're not trying to direct them anywhere. And they don't necessarily get that kind of conversation from most adults.
Let me ask you this. Is when you get a teen to coach, obviously the parents are paying for it. So
yep.
Who's approaching you looking for the help? The parent for the teen or the teen themselves looking for help?
Sometimes it's been both. Mostly it's the parent looking for the help for the teen.
So you're starting out, let me assume here, and you can correct me, a little bit of a struggle in that you may be dealing with a client that hasn't come to you wholeheartedly convinced that coaching is going to be the solution.
Well, actually, that's the first interview. You know, before I take a client on, you know, I want to check. And by the way, that's actually not any different than working in a corporation where the company has said that this executive needs to get coaching.
Yes, absolutely.
So it's a parallel scenario. So what that means, though, is that at the very outset, I have a conversation with the parent to find out what, you know, the parent's sense of things are and what it is that they're seeking, and also to let them know what boundaries that I would be playing with them, and then also to have a conversation with the teenager separate from the parent and see whether or not we can meet on some plane where it looks like it's, from his point of view or her point of view, that it's going to be beneficial. And if it's not, then I'm not going to engage in the same way that I don't engage with an executive in a company where they say, I don't really want to be coaching. I don't even know why I'm having this conversation with you. And once we've explored whether or not there are other possibilities available and they still say no, I'm going, why would I bother? And why would they?
How do you deal with, you know, how do you deal with the confidentiality issue when there's a parent and a teen? I mean, parents are today a little more reserved about who gets to deal with their children alone because of all the things we hear about. How do you deal with that?
Well, one of the big advantages is that, you know, for my almost my entire coaching career, I'd say that my coaching has been 95% over the phone. So that's a big plus, meaning I'm not necessarily in physical proximity, so that piece is not really an issue. The confidentiality piece is, again, it's the same conversation that I would have with someone in a company. I let them know that if they're going to report to me something that's immoral or that they are in danger or that is illegal, I may have to report the content of that out. However, barring that conversation with the person I'm working with, even though the company may be paying or the parent may be paying, they don't get to be privy to what I talk to them about.
Okay, so the setup, the initial engagement, these sort of the rules of engagement and the initial interview are no different for a teen than it would be for an employee in a corporate environment.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now that you start the coaching, is there a difference now?
Well, it's subtle. But in many cases, when you're working with an employee in a company, one of the first and foremost pieces on their board isn't respect. You know, they already have some sort of sense of respect in the world, etc. But for a teen, it's paramount. It's paramount that they get respected as a separate person who has individual and valid personal thoughts and perspectives on the world. Now, that's always important in coaching, but it's almost a frontline issue in the sense that they want to be seen as themselves while they're in the middle of a hormonal struggle about who the heck am I.
So there's a big validation piece here then that you really have to perform with the teen.
Yes, and you do it not as a technique. If they're astute, they're very astute. They have an internal BS meter that if you're doing it just as a technique, they'll catch it, and you'll lose any affinity you have. It needs to be genuine that you absolutely do respect them and validate their frame of reference as, while it may only have been on the planet for 17 years, it has been on the planet for 17 years or 16 years or 18 years, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's one other aspect to that, and that is, especially at this point in history, the millennials, which is this generation, the teens that are here now, as well as, you know, up to just under 30 or 30-ish, I guess, they are different. And I don't mean just, you know, how each generation has a kind of incremental progressive difference from the previous one. And in some cases, it's a reactive difference, meaning, well, I'm not going to be like my parents, so I'm going to be more home when the baby boomers were out, you know. Baby boomer parents were out. It's not that just that simple. They're actually different energetically in the world. And what I mean by that is it's almost as if they are the presence of the future manifested in the present time. And I don't think we've seen that before. So I'm extraordinarily curious about how they work. And they are much sharper with many fewer issues about things like diversity than my generation, for example. You know, technology is the air they breathe, so, and global access is the air they breathe. So they're relating in the world from a very different frame, and I find them to be very socially conscious in a lot of ways.
Which kind of gets to the issue of values. How are they different in values, do you think?
Well, they're different in values. Their values are respect is a key piece, and this is funny. They don't necessarily assign respect out of seniority. They seem to, or at least appear to, in general, and I want to say this generally, not specifically that it's a rule for all, but in general, what I've noticed and experienced is that it's more of what can you demonstrate rather than, yeah, you've spent 20 years in this organization, I should automatically respect you for what you know. No, it's not the same. they are more of a meritocracy than a historical hierarchical model.
I don't know that word, meritocracy.
Yeah, it's based on merit. We're in the throes of the gamer generation, and if you think of it in terms of online gaming, the way they relate with each other and with other people is, what can you do in the game? If you can't do what's needed in the raid when the team is going out, when the guild is going out on a raid, so to speak, together, if you can't do it, you know, then that's where the respect or lack of respect will show up. The fact that you know something about it is less relevant than what you can do with it.
So in your communication with them, I mean, obviously one of the things that that I run across, I'm sure you run across in, when we're coaching business people, is there's a great tendency for them to sort of shift the coaching engagement to a consulting engagement. You maybe have been hired because of your experience and your expertise, and oh, by the way, you're a coach. And so they're looking for you to give them the answers. What do you find with teens? Are they even open to you giving them answers, or are they really more coachable in the sense of exploring their own point of view?
I would say it's less about consulting than it might be a little bit more mentoring. Almost from the point of view of, and again, mentoring from the point of view of presenting a principle rather than a walk where I've walked. Just presenting something, I've found this to be useful. I don't know if you will. I just invite you to consider taking it on for a minute and wearing it around the house like a hat. You know, and they are open to input, definitely open to input. You know, as long as they feel that you don't need them to take it on. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Which
again,
is the difference between you and a parent.
And
a parent needs the kid to take on their values and their frame out of their concern for where they're going to go. If you're not attached to them taking it on, you can present a lot to them.
Let me ask you this. I'm going to jump ahead for a second. But
sure.
Accountability is a big part of coaching, as you know. How do they deal with accountability?
Well, I approach accountability different from a lot of coaches in the first place. I approach with the assumption that people are. And I tend not to hold people accountable because that puts me in the same place as their parent and a teacher and a man, you know, and the police. So when a client says to me, I want you to hold me accountable, hold my feet to the fire, I'm going, first, you know, that's an ugly image. But second, it's like, why would I want to do that? But second, I just go, you know what? I'm going to assume that he is accountable because actually he must be to some degree or he wouldn't still be alive on the planet. So I just want to find out how that works for him. And I get curious about it. And I also ask and inquire, you know, like, how do you want me to follow up with you on stuff that you say you want to take on? What's best for you? Do you want me to ask next week? Do you want me to not ask? Do you want me to only wait until you say you have a problem with it? Or I essentially turn the ball back into the hands, which, as a teenager, most of the time is an alien experience for them.
Yeah.
But they know accountability. I mean, if you've ever watched a gamer who's been playing in one of those online games with their guild, they're accountable to their mates. Because in the game, not being so could have their team die ugly.
Yes, absolutely.
So to speak.
You know, my assumption, and I'll throw it out so you can react to it, is that I have difficulty, as you mentioned, with accountability, that holding people's feet to the fire. I tend to think that the path to accountability is to measure and to make sure that they're committed to the goal they've set. If I'm committed to something, accountability is something that just sort of automatically happens.
Yep. I totally agree with you. And the word I would put in more than accountability is calibration.
Okay. Meaning?
You know, so like, okay, this didn't happen. Let's calibrate and see. Let's take a look at what had it not necessarily be a successful venture for you, and let's calibrate more toward what will be a successful venture for you. And the other thing is that this is one other aspect to them. Their whole lives are in front of them. That's a right. big piece. It's not like when you're coaching somebody who you get in an organization who's 55, 60, and they're looking to address their performance issues, or they're looking to look at retirement, et cetera, and they've had 30, 40 years under their belt of life. There's a whole lot of I don't know that's living there for them.
So give us a taste of the typical issues that you're kind of called in to coach with teens.
Well, sometimes social interactions, you know. They have difficulty at school in social interactions. Sometimes what one might call performance issues in school, and we have to find a context that works for them. Sometimes it is about whether or not they're going to go to college or not go to college, et cetera, and there is such a mandate from parents that doesn't necessarily live deeply enough in the inquiry about what the teen wants. And we think we know what their path should be.
Yes.
And we don't, as parents. We don't. We think we do, but we don't. Because we have to find out really who they are and what they're up to. I coached one teen whose parent wanted him to be going to college, etc., and he loved online games. And, you know, there was the typical conversation that would occasionally happen with a parent, yeah, but you can't make any money at that, etc., etc. And I went and I challenged that. And, you know, this person is in the process of creating his own way of making money playing online games. And, again, one has to dive into their world. You know, this is one of the components of it. The social networking is one of the components of it. You have to dive into their world. And so for him, he recognized that there are tournaments out there where they can make $50,000 in one tournament just by playing the game well. And yet, and the biggest piece for me in coaching them with the what do I want to do with my life is really supporting at an early age that they may want to be doing something that parents haven't seen as successful financially. So if we hearken back to the days of, say, skateboarding, I'm sure the parents of people who skateboard or snowboard or things like that, they would say, oh, yeah, you can't make any money at that. You have to get a job and you have to do this and that. Except then you have people like Tony Hawk and Travis Pastrana on bikes and all of the X Games and those people who have made quite a wonderful living, and they have an entire culture now out of the X Games, and it's been around for a while. And it includes skateboarding and BMX bikes and snowboarding and all sorts of things. So the notion that we know what the work world or the financial world for them is going to be is less solid than it used to be years ago when I was growing up, because the possibilities
let me ask you this. Whoops, I'm sorry there if I interrupted. You kind of cut out on me, Michael.
That's okay. Go for it.
Let me ask you this. I find frequently when I am involved in coaching an employee within a company that the issue that I'm coaching them on isn't necessarily limited to them, and that many times it shows that, you know, maybe the supervisor should also be in this coaching session. Maybe the issue isn't living all by itself with this employee. You know, you're typically brought in, I'm assuming, with a teen when there is some sort of conflict between the parent and the teen, between maybe just desires, not necessarily that they're disagreeing. As you just mentioned, with maybe career path. Do you get involved with the parents in coaching often when you're working with the teens?
Sometimes. I'll say sometimes, and sometimes it's necessary, really necessary, because I'm reminded of the dog whisperer guy, Caesar.
Yeah.
Where he would say that, you know, he would have to train the owners and rehabilitate the dog because the dog wasn't really the issue. You know, so sometimes that's present there. However, I can say that most of the time I'm not brought into a remedial situation unless it's about school and grades and things like that. What I do love in working with them is I love working, because this is part of my passion, is on them discovering, owning, and then leveraging their uniqueness, even toward whatever solutions they come up with their parents, whatever solutions they come up with for their work life and their girlfriend or things like that. And sometimes I've coached relationship issues, and I don't mean parent ones. I mean, boyfriend-girlfriend issues with the teen, and just had them have a space where they could speak stuff that they can't necessarily really share with other people.
Excellent point. You sort of touch on that. I mean, when you think about it, the teen is probably more isolated than any other generic group that we could think of naming that we coach.
Yeah.
In terms of having
because
a safe
it's that
place
time of their,
to go to
their life college. That they are.
So, what would be your advice to someone who is thinking of coaching teens?
Understand their world. Discard any notions, if there are any, that you know better than they do. And just be really curious about who this wonderful expression of diversity is in front of you. And watch out for any assumptions you make, because it's very easy to get hooked on what you think might be adding to their well-being.
Let me ask you about the mechanics of it. We've talked a little bit about the opening interview. We've talked a little bit about accountability. You mentioned that they're probably very comfortable with phone coaching because they're such an online presence.
Yep.
What about time of the coaching? Is an hour too long, a half hour too short, the frequency? Anything that you would want to share with us in that area?
They are as individual in that as adults are.
Okay.
Some of them have a longer attention. Some of them have a shorter attention. It depends. They're not long, at least the ones I've spoken with, they're not long on you talking.
that would kind of eliminate the fact that you were a coach.
Yes, really, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But it's tempting. I'm going to share my wisdom with the teen. Yeah, right. Yeah. Except he knows more about how this world operates intuitively than we do. Because, as I said, they're presencing the future right now. They're moving towards what's there. Even to the point of understanding that they learn differently. And this is enormous. They learn differently than we did. They approach things with different, as you mentioned, values, but things like, I can Google that. Why should I try to remember that? And they do have things like loyalty. They may have a value of loyalty, but it's not going to be loyalty to a company because they watched their boomer parents get downsized and capsized and right-sized with companies wherein the company didn't display loyalty to them. So why would they possibly do that? They're more of a free agent world. And so their life experience, the experience, is important.
Michael, the impression I'm getting from listening to you talk about this is that coaching teens probably requires you to adhere to more pure coaching than even dealing with adults.
Yes. Yes, and it's because the temptation to step into their ability to self-direct, which is in the process of forming, is large. And it's also because as older people, we are conditioned to think that we know. If we can approach them with a lot of that we don't know, and we're really curious, we and they will have a much better time. And when they want information, they'll ask.
So let me ask you this. How has coaching teens impacted your coaching with people who are not teens?
You know what it does is that it brings a freshness to it. Because in the same way that when one is a parent and you start to see the world again freshly and newly through your child's eyes at 2 and 3 and 4 and 5, you start to see the world again freshly from a unique perspective. And you start to relate with it, and you start to be open to it, and you start to be passionate about other things. I mean, you can hear that I love things like watching the X Games. You know, listening to different music of this world, this generation, and seeking to get it. I don't pretend that I'm a teenager, but I find it invigorating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they see the world differently from how I do.
Well, you've certainly got me excited about it. I mean, the freshness of the experience is what I'm going to kind of walk away from this conversation with, and it's going to make me rethink whether I would like to work with teens occasionally, just to keep myself relevant with the world as it's changing.
Yes, that is a big advantage. You just really put your finger on it. Keeping yourself relevant with the world that is changing and seeing it from the inside out rather than the normal way that we engage with the world as it's changing, from a reactive to, well, it used to be this way, now it's that way. They don't see it that way because they don't have it used to be this way.
Michael, this has been a great conversation. I am so glad that you made time on short notice to talk about this topic, and I can't wait for us to have lunch next week and find out what other fascinating things you're doing that I don't know about. I'm sure there's a bunch of them.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm playing in a lot of worlds, and yeah. I've been interested, you know, like most recently in, not most recently, actually for the last 14 years, but it's now become a recent thing, in gamification, approaching one's life as if it's a game. And now you're going to see gamification all over the place. It's going to be the trend. It's the future. It's actually part of what this generation brings in, and all of the aspects of it. And I'm loving it. It's like home for me now.
Well, you have a curiosity that I have never seen in anybody else. Your level of curiosity goes way off the end of the scale. So, and I say that as a compliment.
Thank you.
Before we wind up here, anything you want to tell us about your new website?
Oh, yes. I'm so excited. It's great. You know, when you go to redo a website or that kind of thing as a business person out in the world, you know, you get deluged by what, you know, all of the social media, internet marketing, SEO people tell you about how, they start to tell you about how to be, right?
Yep.
Which, for me... While I'm open to listening to experts, unless you get me, really get where I come from and et cetera, and you have a sense of the who-ness of me, that kind of stuff says, that grates, because it's basically saying to me, you have to do it this way, which that's not why I got into coaching in the first place. So I found someone who really got me, and then he has his team. And there were times I would have to calibrate with him, but he had his team get me. And since, you know, most of what I'm about is uniqueness, I had to have a website that was going to be a unique expression of me, but also to be me. So it had to have colors that felt like me. It had to have the language. It had to have the look, the style, all that sort of stuff. And I feel like finally I have one. And they just... In doing that, they helped me coalesce even more strongly what I'm about. So it was a great process. I'm excited about it. I'm excited what it does and the other things, and it's growing me out into the world. It's very cool.
Okay, so give us, what's the URL for that website?
That's michaelstratford.com.
Okay.
S-T-R-A-T-F-O-R-D. Michael Stratford.
I will say you have more websites listed. If I Google you, you are on more places. It was actually difficult to find where to really land to get the new website.
Ah, well, you won't. That we're going to be taking care of that.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll be michaelstratford.com. Yeah, and yeah, I do come up early on the Google pages, early and often.
Well, that's good news. Well, look, I've interrupted you a number of times. Is there something that you want to elaborate on before we kind of wrap up here, or something that I walked over you on about this team coaching?
No, just that if, you know, the heart of it is just appreciation for them as people, not as children, as people. And when you touch that, that makes an enormous difference in how you relate with them. And don't take it all that seriously, because they will poke the daylights out of you.
Michael, thank you very much for coming back, and I'm going to continue to call on you from time to time because you are so refreshing to talk to. So,
oh, well, thanks, Doug, for having me come on, and I hope that anybody who's listening to this who's even intrigued about the notion of coaching a teen has some idea about what a joy it is.
All right, great. Well, cool. Look, have a great evening, and again, thank you very much for joining us on the show.
You're welcome. Bye.